To the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Today is Wednesday, March 2nd, and the time is 1:33. I'm Senator Costello, and with me is Senator Gray Jackson. Welcome.
Thank you.
And Vice Chair Senator Rivek. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Thanks for being here today. Today we have, first off, we have a bill on our schedule, Senate Bill 132. And then following that, we've devoted some time to this afternoon to talk about workforce development and infrastructure investment presentation on different trades and opportunities for young people. So today should be a really interesting committee meeting. But again, we will start with Senate Bill 132. This is the bill that we heard in a previous meeting. It's the Controlled Substance Database and exempting the veterinarians from the requirements in that PDMP database. And this is the second hearing in Labor and Commerce. We've opened and closed public testimony. There's pages and pages of letters of support for the bill. And the bill sponsor, Senator Holland, is in another meeting right now. He's chairing another meeting. But his chief of staff, Nikki Rose, is here, along with Dr. Berngart, who's a member of the Board of Veterinary Examiners. And first, I wanted to say thank you for being here to answer any final questions on this bill from the committee members, and wanted to give you an opportunity to give any final comments before we look to the will of the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is Nikki Rose, for the record, from Senator Holland's office. I staff his office, and I just wanted to thank the committee again for allowing us to be here and to hear this bill and bring it up an additional time, give time for everyone to have their questions answered. Thank you.
And Dr. Bernhardt, did you want to say anything about the bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Dr. Rachel Bernhardt. I'm the chair of the Board of Veterinary Examiners, and I just appreciate the time and the thoughtfulness that this committee has put into this bill. Thank you.
Are there any questions that committee members have? I know, Senator Gray Jackson, you're a co-sponsor of this legislation and probably look forward to it moving.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I am a co-sponsor, and I'm really glad that I'm a co-sponsor. And I do look forward to the bill moving not just out of this committee but to the floor for a vote in both houses. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Rebeck?
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you. I move Senate Bill number 132, version alpha, also referred to as 32-LIMA-0861/alpha. Be advanced from the committee with the individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Is there any objection to the bill moving? Okay, seeing no objection, the bill moves from committee, and we'll take a brief at ease while we sign the documents. Welcome back to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. And now we're going to have a special presentation this afternoon. I'd like to welcome Aaron Plickett and also Everett Collins. Aaron is the business manager for the Plumbers and Steam Fitters UA Local 367, and Everett is the building trades agent. And you're here today to share with the Labor and Commerce Committee, you know, what you do and your efforts specifically to help train young Alaskans for jobs in your profession. And I'm really excited to have you here today, because we really do focus a lot on the jobs and the job market and what's out there for Alaskans. And just wanted to give you an opportunity to share what you do and then open it up for questions from the committee. So thank you. And if you don't mind stating your name for the record, even though I just did, but thank you.
Absolutely. My name is Aaron Plickett. I'm the business manager for Plumbers and Steam Fitters Local 367, financial secretary for local, and chairman of our Joint Apprenticeship Training Trust as well. And Madam Chair, I want to thank you and the committee members for this opportunity. This is really incredible to get to come in and discuss with you guys firsthand and get to do a little bragging on what Local 367 is and our history. And to start off, I gave some packets out that just I'm not going to read word for word of my written testimony, as I know you have that and can go over that, but I wanted to start with just a little bit of history on our local. So with that, Our local was established in 1938 to support military construction in the Anchorage and South Central Alaska area, as well as the Aleutian Chain, and started off with 15 members that sent a letter to the National United Association of Plumbers and Gas Fitters at that time to request representation. That membership has grown today to be over 800 members and working in almost every capacity of the construction market in plumbing and steam fitting, from residential construction to hospitals, industrial, and power production facilities. The workforce development of Local 367 is something that we saw very early on. In fact, our forefathers in the trades started a training contribution off of their wages in 1956. So they decided to make a deduction from their wages of 1 cent per hour to go ahead and create and put forward to be able to train the next generation of mechanics. And with that, we've rolled that forward year over year. From that time to today, our training contribution from our employers as part of our benefit package in lieu of wages is now at $1.55, which supports our training program to be pretty self-sufficient. And in that time, it's turned out and created hundreds of qualified licensed technicians across our state that have really played a role in almost every major portion of or piece of construction in our history, from be it from our bases to the Trans-Alaska Pipeline to the large facilities that we see in Anchorage, all across the Aleutian Chain in the state. So it's workforce development is something that the local has taken extremely seriously, and our national association supports us with that as well.
Aaron, do you mind sharing with the committee what occupations are involved in your local?
Absolutely. Plumbers, we kind of all have an idea of what plumbers do, but sometimes we don't think about the intricacies of it. So one of those would be medical gas installation. If we're ever seeping in the hospital and we see somebody with an oxygen mask on, we're the folks that install those oxygen lines behind the walls. We run oil and nitrogen systems that power all the surgeon's tools. When we're at the dentist's office and they're using a vacuum in our mouths, we install those vacuum systems. But all the way down to your domestic and potable water systems, the heat inside of our facilities, the building automation controls of an HVAC technician to keep us nice and cool in the summer and nice and warm in the winter. And then on our industrial side, it's everything from oil industry, from pipelines, to most recently in the Anchorage area, there was a number of new power facilities built across South Central Alaska. I believe we had six of those facilities.
That's correct.
And so some of the things that we don't tend to think about when we think plumbers, everybody tends to get an idea in their mind when we say the word plumber sometimes. But we also have a lot of members that perform residential service and construction in that sector. So we're really kind of across the board. But plumbers, pipe fitters, service technicians, and welders. That's kind of our fourth.
Thank you.
You're welcome. The apprenticeship program, the United Association is made up of 385,000 members across the country. We're in every state, every province of Canada, and are truly one of the first international associations, with expanding now into partner agreements with Ireland and with Australia. And one of the things that this has done is across the country and Canada, the United Association has set a bar forward that our apprenticeship consists of 5 years and 10,000 hours of training to achieve a journey worker's classification in our trade. And so currently we're the longest apprenticeship to complete. And I think that's been based on the fact of how much work that we cover and how much the public needs to be protected with the systems that we install. So when we're dealing with domestic water systems or wastewater systems, it's really important that people have the proper training to make sure that they're handling those systems with care. So with that, our apprentices, when they come into our program, they go through once a year, they come to school. We have a brick and mortar facility in Anchorage that we do our training in. And our apprentices are required to do 240 hours of classroom training a year. And they do that in a 40-hour a week block. So they actually, if they're working for any of our signatory employers at that time, they're laid off to obtain training. They are then allowed to draw their unemployment insurance while they're in doing training, so they can still make sure their bills are paid. But we train them at that 40 hours a week for a six-week block. Each year they come back and they build upon the skills that they had learned in the year before or the year previous. And that, the rest of the year, the apprentices are then put onto an out-of-work list where they're available for any of our signatory employers to hire them and bring them out to work. So our goal is that they would be gainfully employed throughout the rest of the year in acquiring their hands-on skills. The apprentices begin their journey with the UA at 50% of a journeyman's wage. So currently, the journeyman scale is $41 an hour on the check with a
$20.50.
Is the first year apprentice. Thank you. And then every 2,000 hours as they journey through the program, they will receive a 10% increase in their wages, until they finally reach their top percentage and will be at the journeyman scale of $41 an hour. They start on day one with a full health and benefit package, as any other member in the local, so pensions, 401ks, training fund, and that are provided as part of that package as well. Currently, today, it's been tough. We're down to, right now, we have 57 apprentices enrolled in our program. And I think our historical average is about 75 that we try to have in the program at all times. It's been as high as a little over 100. But this has kind of been the average over the last 6 to 7 years. We've seen an average between about 55 and 60 apprentices at a time. And that's based on how many we can get employed. It's really difficult to keep people around if we can't. You know, the other connection of the training side is that they have to have a job that goes with it, or they just kind of fade off into the sunset a little bit. And that's, you know, where I think workforce development over the last 5-6 years has been increasingly difficult. We've seen a slowdown in the economy. I mentioned the power plants around South Central Alaska earlier, and that was a kind of a big rush in Anchorage's and South Central's economy. Of a big opportunity, lots of people going into those facilities to construct those large plants. And when those larger facilities were done, we saw it being a little bit more of just small private money construction projects, which really just don't put large numbers of people to work. And so that has made it quite a bit more challenging. In fact, the retention of our second to fourth year apprentices has been at an all-time low. People come in at a first-year apprentice, and they are excited. They see the opportunities ahead of them. They're excited to be learning something new. And they come in, and maybe that first year they only had 3 to 4 months worth of work after completing their 240-hour class, and they kind of start to wonder, second to third year, if they have a repetitive year of low hours, of less than 1,000 hours maybe worked in the year, they're starting to deselect a little bit and starting to worry more about the up and downs of the construction industry and whether or not they can take that kind of an up and down market for their personal finances. So and I think that's spread a little bit, that if construction's slow and it's difficult to keep people working, we start to see young people deselect maybe construction as an avenue that they would want to go down. And so that's been a bit of an issue. I could express that with this year. I've had an apprenticeship opening for 6 months in my area, and I currently have 24 applicants. This same time period in 2010, I had just over 200 for you know, 20 spots that would be coming into the program. So there's some things that we hope to see, you know, starting to change with that. And I think probably the biggest portion of that is going to be the infrastructure dollars that'll be coming into our state. I think potentially. Have the ability to make a huge impact on workforce development for all of us across the state, and we're certainly excited about that. And I'll say that Local 367 stands, you know, ready to meet the challenges, not just in the recruitment, but the retention of these apprentices, and kind of why this is so important to us. And I thank you again for the opportunity to be here. Outreach, how we get the knowledge out there of these opportunities. We have partnered with agencies, pretty traditional agencies in the past, from UAA, Avtech, King Career Center, just to name a few. Alaska Works Partnership has been fantastic with their Construction Academy classes. those have been some staples that have really helped to move us forward, and we see a lot of young people coming from that. In 2010, the United Association created a program nationally called the Veterans in Piping. This was the first of its kind that I am aware of, that we worked with transitioning soldiers while still on active duty to be able to take extensive, intensive training, both in welding and HVAC, on their active bases, and then were direct entered into apprenticeship programs around the country upon completion of these courses. And as of 2018, we've had over 1,600 VIP graduates from our program who have been successfully placed into locals all over the country. We have several here in Anchorage that have come through that process as well. Currently, a couple of the bases we're on with that program is Fort Lewis McChord. We're in Fort Hood, Camp Pendleton, just to name a few. I believe there's 8 bases, and I provided a little bit of information in your packets, and please, you know, feel free to look online at that. There's a great deal of information, and we're really proud of what the UA has been doing in this Veterans in Piping program and finding some success, and we'd like to bring that forward up here. With the infrastructure dollars and looking at the future and what we discussed with the finding apprentices and finding folks, my team at Local 367 started having conversations last year ahead of looking at the infrastructure dollars. We have some projects that have come up in the YK Delta, specifically in the Bethel region. We just finished the Bethel Hospital project. We were out there for about 2 years, had a workforce of about 30 people, 30 plumbers and pipe fitters that were on that project for 2 years. And when we first got out there, I put an advertisement out with Department of Labor, and I reached out with Alaska Works Partnership for an apprenticeship outreach. And during that time, I had 2 people apply during the entire course of the 2-year project. One person, when we accepted him into the program, actually didn't realize what he was applying for and didn't accept. The other person did, but found complications when it was time to come to Anchorage and do their training. 6 weeks at a time, coming in from a village, maybe can be really difficult on people. So it caused my team to start really taking a look at what else could we do. We just picked up a significant project that'll start this summer in the Bethel region. That's a hotel project that stands to put 25 to 30 plumbers to work for 1.5 years. But we're really looking down the road at these infrastructure dollars. As I heard Senator Murkowski say recently, that we hope it's an end of the honey bucket. And we're really excited about water and sewer infrastructure projects taking off across rural Alaska. We are way behind for the amount of training that we're going to need to do to prep people for this work. And I'm well aware of how difficult it is to a lot of times bring people from Anchorage to work in a rural community. So the idea came out that we would look to extend our apprenticeship training program and open a training facility in Bethel. And so that conversation blossomed here with the legislature and some conversations with you folks. We've had a few meetings now with some stakeholders in the community. Everett and I will be going out to the community in April, and it starts with the recruitment of apprentices, but we're excited to take our brick-and-mortar training that we have done for, since 1956 in Anchorage, and take that out and see what we can do in a rural portion of the state. Our employers are just as excited about this as it creates the opportunity for local hire inside rural portions of the state, which is an incredible cost savings to those employers that are looking at coming out and performing work in the area. And it's going to get folks ready. We're looking at Bethel right now specifically, but I think this can be modeled to go into several regions of our state. When I think about the Aleutian Chain and the opportunities that are coming down through Unalaska with the potential for geothermal power facilities, we have 40 seafood processing facilities throughout the chain that are all bringing in workers from outside the state. I think there's a great need for actual training of refrigeration controls, what we do, and this could be modeled to go in several places. But Bethel is where we're going to start, as we have a project right now, and we're ready to hit the ground on that and very excited. Really, for this to work, I think it's going to take a very cohesive approach. It's going to take the long-time training programs that we know the specifics of what we need to do to make sure people are ready to fill the need for our contractors and then our end users and clients and what they expect. It's going to take, I think, a great deal of commitment from the Department of Labor rolling forward and for all of us to try some things different. So there's a couple things really that I asked that you could help us with. One, I believe that the governor put in an ad for $10 million into the Department of Labor budget specifically to assist with STEP and other grant resources. Vitally important for organizations like ours that are coming out of a fairly rough time, been struggling for a few years just with low hours and things. This would really help us to expand those programs. There's a great deal of cost that's going to come and be involved with taking our program out to a region. But we're committed to make that happen, and I have full belief the state's going to be here and the Department of Labor is going to be here to help us. In the last portion, it would be something a little bit different of an ask, and that is that I mentioned it earlier, is the training is only as good as the jobs that we're going to offer at the end of this. And I would love to say that all employers see the value of apprentices on their projects and all employers that in this line of work would utilize apprentices on their own. But unfortunately, we don't see that. There is a cost factor that comes with hiring an apprentice who really doesn't know how to do too many facets of the job yet, that maybe hiring a journey worker for a few dollars an hour more, they can perform all these aspects. So one of the things I'd ask for consideration or thought and be willing to take any kind of advice is that we set forward some form of mandatory apprenticeship utilization into these projects as they are approved by the legislature and move forward, is that if we're going to see these projects come out, that maybe we set a bar that 10% of the hours per craft on the project hire apprentices. That 10% of those hours are performed by apprentices. And we see that as a massive opportunity. That's the commitment from the state moving forward, saying we value these apprentices, we see the need, best way I think we can get some folks to work. And with that, I'm happy to take any questions you have for us.
Thank you very much, Aaron. I think it's really exciting that you're moving to rural communities and trying to move what you do in Anchorage to a community and train people there, because the communities where people come from, we want them to live there. And that's the issue with, I think, that's appealing to the Alaska Hire, is that we want Alaskans to have the jobs. But if the job, if there aren't people there to employ, I think the next best thing is to have the apprentices there, because they're from our communities and they're not going anywhere. And so when the out-of-state person leaves, then, we have nothing. But if the Alaskan can stay and have that job. So I share your valuing of the apprenticeship program. I think it's really important. And I certainly will be looking at ways to further that, and appreciate your comments on that. I have a question about where you find young people and how you get information into our schools. I'm familiar with King Tech, and I think the committee is also, but can you talk a little bit about the partnership that you have with King Tech, and is it something that you also have with other schools in Anchorage and in other areas?
Absolutely. Thank you for the question. King Tech has been a longtime partner, and it's one that we offer a direct entry once a year. If they have a student that specifically is interested in the pipe trades or in welding courses, typically the instructors there will reach out to us, let us know. We reach out pretty routinely to see how those classes are coming along and ask if they have students that are kind of standing out and really wanting to pursue extra time in their welding and activities. But it's been difficult getting access at times to the schools. To get in with the kids, we employ a full-time organizer or recruiter for the local. His name's Joshua Lamb, a young man that came up through our trade. I found it important also to bring somebody a little bit younger in to talk to the kids in high school. Is when I come in, they see the gray hair and they kind of say, "Oh, maybe this he doesn't know what he's talking about." Not too interested. But we have had some success. We partnered with the Alaska School Counselors Association, And we started hosting or sponsoring an event at their conference that they did in Anchorage. I believe it canceled last year, unfortunately, with the pandemic and things, or it went virtual last year. But that we did see some good success that was coming there. Constantly looking at outreach, and really, I think AlaskaWorks Partnership, we rely on them quite a bit as they do a lot of outreach for us, and they do a wonderful job at it. I always think there's more opportunity, and whether we host, the Department of Labor hosts a hands-on training event with the trades every year at the Palmer Fairgrounds. We've done that for a number of years. It's been extremely successful. It's a fun event. We get a lot of kids out there that we put torches in their hands under very good supervision and safety, and do a little bit of welding, and it's always makes me smile when I see a student that comes out and they soldered a fitting together, and they first thing they ask, can I take this home? And I always think, well, I'm sure that's great till your mom sees it. We've had some great success with that, and right now we do an open house once a week. Once a month, the third Wednesday of every month, we run an open house at our training center that's out to the general public. We advertise that at the Department of Labor jobs offices. We send that out through some of the schools. It's on our Facebook and social media. But what's the avenue for the Veterans Association that Josh is working with?
The current one,
the military, he went out there on Monday. I met with them.
I can't answer that.
The Military Youth Academy.
There's a, it's a transitioning program.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Where? So you mentioned the open house, and I think that's wonderful. Where is your facility located?
It is at 617 West Potter Road. So we're right on Potter, right between Arctic and C Street. Have a large two-story facility there on the side of the road, and would love to host any time that you would be in town or that you would like to come by and see the facility. And really, we started the open houses and had very little participation, I think, from the public. And we're a year into it now of once a month. And that was the point of continuing to do it, was that if it continues to be once a month, whether it took us 2 years or 3 years, we're going to continue to do it, and the word spreads. And so we have seen over after a year of doing this once a month, the numbers went from 1 to 2 people stopping in, and now we're at 5 to 6. We're seeing more of our members, family members coming in, but they're also reaching out to in-laws and cousins and those folks. And we're seeing a lot of young women coming down to the training center, which is something we're thrilled about, that to see women looking at construction trades a little bit differently, knowing that they have a place in the construction world as well, especially in the pipe trades. It's fantastic. Women make the best welders, as we would say.
They absolutely do.
Something about being calm, I think.
Well, thank you very much, Aaron. And Everett, did you want to share with the committee what your role is and also state your name for the record, just so our recording secretaries can get the appropriate person talking?
Madam Chair, my name is Everett Collins. I'm a business agent for Local 367 Plumbers and Steam Fitters. I deal mostly with manpower. I do the dispatching. I work with new apprentices coming in, helping them figure out how it works with our employers so that they know what opportunities are out there, what they can do with the training center to better themselves and put themselves in a better position to make themselves more employable. I work with the contractors to try to get the young members out to work, the new apprentices, try to get them in jobs that are suitable for them.
Thank you. And do the so could you talk a little bit about the transferability between our state and all the other states? I mean, it sounds like once you're a member, you basically can be pulled for a job anywhere once you've received the right training.
That is correct. So the United Association has hundreds of locals across the country, and I spend a good time of my good portion of my time networking with the agents at other locals, so that if our members are short on work and they need a job, I can help them to move throughout the country to work at other locals. We've seen an unfortunate trend lately with the lack of employment in the state, mm-hmm. that a lot of my members that I've sent out, I'm concerned aren't coming back. I think we've got a lot of work coming in the future, next 5 to 10 years, like Aaron said, and I think we need to work on developing our local workforce and try to keep them in our state.
Thank you. Senator Rivak.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I was just reading, and I recall you brought up how you started with 15 plumbers due to MilCon coming to Alaska, which is near and dear to my heart, and ACAP and the VIP program sounds fantastic. I was just curious kind of what the current situation is from your perspective with MilCon. Are we seeing trends steady, downward, upward, and kind of how does that affect training?
Through the chair, thank you, Senator Rivak, for the question. I think we're seeing more outreach and more accessibility than we have seen in years past. I was really excited about VIP when it took off in 2010 and started lobbying hard to my general office back east to see if J-Bear could be a potential location as the numbers of transitioning soldiers in Alaska is massive. Unfortunately, right now, they aren't expanding the program, but they have offered to provide services to allow us to do the run the VIP program and train in our own facility. And so that's where we're trying now to make some connections or meet the folks to be able to come onto the base and explain to leadership that we have this opportunity. If we can allow these soldiers to come in and make the commitment that they want to come into an advanced welding program like this or a refrigeration training program, the UA will continue to make the commitment for their placement upon completing the program. So even if we can't do this training on one of the active bases or on the base itself, we have a facility. Our school runs generally about 32 weeks a year. With our normal apprenticeship classes. And then the rest of the year, we try to fill that time with, we'll do a helmets to hard hats training every year. We do women in the trades training through Alaska Works Partnership. And then we typically do just a couple of basic construction academy courses, basic plumbing skills. But any avenues or introductions that you could help us to make into the base there would be greatly appreciated to advance more of that training in Anchorage and here in town. I think it couldn't hurt.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I would absolutely be open to those conversations and to help. I know there's several folks that get out of the military. I have several friends who went into the trades. For several folks, they really enjoy it quite a bit. I purchased a welder last year, a Lincoln 180, and much to my wife's disapproval. And so you've given me an idea. Maybe I can get her to try with her steady hand, and maybe she'll be less disapproving. But I might benefit from one of your open houses. I might be one of the folks taken home learning how to use my new toy. How about specific to military construction and those opportunities for work for the folks you train? How are the trends there?
I believe the northern regions, and I'm sorry, through the chair, Senator Beck, I believe the northern regions of the state have seen some significant projects in the area. Both J-Bear and in our region has been fairly slow. We had a significant project in Shimia that we finished up recently with the repowering of the base there. We also performed some relining of their drainage systems across the island as they had been deteriorating really poorly. So we had a crew out there this last year performing work there. Just with the slowdown in the past, you know, we worked on the F-22s hangars there, several of the big hangar projects and barracks projects out there, but definitely seen a significant slowdown over the last several years. I know there has been a few projects out there. Not necessarily that our contractors had been the successful recipients of the awards for those projects.
Thank you. Thanks for being here. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Rivak. I have to admit, my son actually asked for a welder for Christmas, and yes, so we didn't get it for him, but I think we'll actually be showing it too. Maybe we should take a committee field trip.
Madam Chair, we would love that.
Oppose that.
Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. thank you so much for the presentation, and I have to tell you, I learned a little bit more about what plumbers do other than toilets and kitchen sinks, so I really appreciate that. And I'm just really pleased about the governor's $10 million added to the Department of Labor and support it 100%. And I was also intrigued by your suggestion about the mandatory utilization of apprentices, and I really want to look into it and figure out how to do it. Hopefully it won't take a bill because that takes too long. So I'm definitely going to talk about it offline with my colleagues here and others. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And I wanted to, Everett, to go back to you and ask you a question about the apprentices and the process. Do you interview them? And if so, what are you looking for in terms of those that are brought on?
Madam Chair, yes, I am on the I'm a trustee on our training. You sit through our interviews. We tend to look for people that are motivated mechanically. They have mechanical aptitude. They want to tinker with things. They want to build things. They want to see something that they've done at the end of the day. So mechanical aptitude, a desire. You can see the desire in people when they come in and tell.
Taking pre-classes.
Classes that they've taken ahead of time, UAA classes, show that they've got the initiative, they want to do something, they're motivated, they still want to do it. AvTech in Seward, again, puts on classes. We love seeing those people come in. They have the education, they've got it, they've started, they're showing the initiative, they want to do it. They're going to stay.
And, Everett, are these young Alaskans, are they 18 and older, or can you take younger apprentices?
You have to be 18 to be in the construction trades, but you can come in and see our facility. High schoolers come in and see it during the open houses, and you can see the excitement. They're ready. We have kids come in. Like Aaron said, we're getting 5, 6, 10 people come in now, and the word is spreading through the high schools, and you can see they're excited to build something. So we have the organizer out. He hits high schools, talks about what we do, and occasionally we see the high schoolers come in as well. But you do have to be 18 to join.
Well, thank you very much for being here. Are there any further comments or questions from committee members? Okay, seeing none. Again, I want to thank you for coming today to present. It's been a real learning experience, and we'll stay in touch with in regards to any information you want my office to send out about what you offer in your open houses. And as far as the items you mentioned that the legislature is looking at, I think that you've found a group of people that are very interested in opportunities for young people and jobs. So with that, I want to thank you. And we're going to go ahead and take a brief at ease while we get ready for our next presenters. Welcome back to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Next, before the committee, we have Josh Bolton, who's the statewide training director for the Northwest Carpenters Union. Josh, welcome to the committee, and feel free to share what you do and the training opportunities that you provide for Alaska's future workers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Josh Bolton. I'm the training director for the Alaska Carpenters Training Trust. We train both apprenticeship and journey-level workers under all craft jurisdictions that the Northwest Carpenters represent in Alaska. Today, I'd just like to talk to you a little bit about our training program, some of the workforce needs that we're seeing, and some of the ways that we're working really hard to try to meet some of these needs. So So we represent over 1,200 members statewide, approximately 60 signatory contractors that employ our members to perform their work. One of the things a lot of people, when they think about carpenters, we think about building buildings, building homes. We have such a broad scope of work. It involves a lot of training. We represent the carpenters that do the concrete forms, the foundations, the footings of our structures, all the metal studs, wood framing, drywall, all the finishes that you see inside the buildings. That's all performed by our carpenters. Our pile drivers, these are the folks that go out and drive pile in the ocean. They do a lot of work on our docks and piers all across the state. Our millwrights, precision mechanics, they perform turbine works, rebuilding turbines, revamping turbines on our power generating equipment all throughout the state. Typically, when people think of Carpenters Union, you don't usually think of divers, but we actually represent the commercial divers. These are our folks that go underwater anywhere in Alaska. They do underwater bridge inspections. They perform underwater welding. It's a very vigorous career that requires a lot of travel. A lot of dedication, a lot of time away from home. Our scaffold directors, again, work throughout the state, erecting scaffold anything up to 125 feet high in the air. They are qualified to build without any engineering. Anything over 125 feet requires prior engineering, and then our erectors assemble the scaffold. We listed welders here because all of our trades require welding skills. Our carpenters do a lot of metal stud welding, which requires certification. Our pile drivers welding pile on bridges, again, requires certification. Our millwrights welding down these turbine settings and pedestals all require certification. So we actually do a lot of welding certifications and far more than most people recognize. A little bit on our training overall. We do have one training facility in Anchorage and one in Fairbanks. We do rent classroom space here in Juneau to offer some of our journey level upgrade training. We are exploring some venues for possibly doing some actual apprenticeship training here in Juneau. We recognize there is a need in the Southeast for more qualified carpenters, and we're taking steps to reach that. We employ 5 full-time instructors statewide, 1 full-time coordinator that works at our Anchorage facility. I am the full-time statewide director. I do work out of our Fairbanks facility, but I spend probably 2 weeks a month in Anchorage, and I've been in Juneau here probably 3 times in the last month, visiting different schools, working on some journeyman upgrade training and things like that. Our program overall, it is a 4-year program, federally registered apprenticeship. Requires approximately 7,000 hours of training. 960 of that takes place in our classrooms, in our training centers in Anchorage and Fairbanks. The other 6,000 hours on-the-job training, where the apprentices are working for our signatory contractors, could be anywhere in the state, and we actually currently have a crew of pile drivers and pile driver apprentices working on the Port of Antarctica. There's nobody better in the nation at performing that cold weather work than our members. And that's recognized. Our current retention rate over the last 5 years or so, we've been maintaining really close to the 80% mark. Historically, going back to when we became federally registered in the early 50s, going back that far, right around 62, 63%. But in the last 5 years, we've really worked hard to take down some of the barriers that we saw were either not bringing people in or maybe pushing them away once they were in. And it's been really important for us to make that go away. We wanted to bring people in, train them, and keep them. We want them to find the work and find the valuable careers. Just some of our stats here at a glance. We currently have 167 apprentices statewide. That is slightly higher than our norm. And this summer, we intend to blow that number right out of the water. We've got a tremendous amount of work coming up. One of the reasons that I wanted to have you see the demographics up there is we're a tremendously diverse program. We have no roadblocks. Like I said, we've done everything we can to destroy those. And we want this program to be for everyone. It's for all Alaskans. One of our biggest requirements is Alaska resident to apply to our program. And other than that, a driver's license and a diploma or a GED. Those are the 3 requirements to receive an application and have it considered. So we've done a lot of work to to try to really open this up for everyone.
Josh, where is your training facility in Anchorage, the one in Anchorage?
The one in Anchorage is on King Street, essentially in the industrial area of Anchorage. A little bit of breakdown here by area and our different crafts. Our 1281 carpenters, that would be our Anchorage Carpenters Local. They essentially cover all work from the 63rd parallel south in Alaska, which is roughly the Tok cutoff. Moving south, we have 84 apprentices based out of Local 1281. Fairbanks covers everything from the 63rd parallel north, and we currently have 50 apprentices in our Fairbanks program. Our pile drivers, we're at 19 right now, and again, that's a statewide local, so those folks, they travel everywhere, wherever they're needed. Same thing with the divers. Our scaffold directors also work statewide, but they're represented out of 1281, as are our millwrights. As you can see, the scaffold directors, divers, millwrights, those are smaller numbers, mostly due to work and workload. There just hasn't been a lot of work in those areas in the last few years. And we've kind of slowed down our intake there a little bit because we don't want to bring people in and tell them we have no work for them. So we have slowed down intake there. But for carpenters and pile drivers in general, our intake is going to skyrocket here in the next couple of years. Some of the shortages we've seen in the last few, we have been fairly shorthanded over the last 3 years. A lot of that has been due to retirement. We've had a lot of retiring members. There was a past precedence in the 80s, early 90s, where they weren't exactly looking to take young people into the program. They wanted more experience, and that kind of slowed things down for us and kind of put us where we are right now. During the recession, we did see a lot of our members have to take work out of state. Again, if they're qualified through our program, it's recognized anywhere in the country that's represented by a United Brotherhood of Carpenters Union. So we did see a lot of members leave state. Seattle was booming. A lot of our members headed to Washington, Oregon areas, and a lot of them haven't come back. There's still a tremendous amount of work there, and they just haven't been interested in coming back to Alaska. During that recession, we also saw quite a few people leave to find other work in other industries that had work and weren't shutting down. And COVID-19, I think, has been a tremendous effort for all of us to work through in any regard, in any trade, in any facet of life, really. Moving forward, some of our projections in 2022, we're looking to take in, it's probably going to be slightly higher than 70 new apprentices this year. And that's going to be essentially a record for us in one given year. We have such a need. We have 8 apprentices that aren't working right now, and here we are, March 2nd. Typically, this is the time of year that we see work has kind of slowed down, and maybe we're waiting for the summer months to come along for new projects to start, and there has been no slowdown for us. As of, I think it was January, we had 100% of our apprentices were employed and working. We're still short on journey-level workers. Approximately 200 more are expected to be needed in this coming summer season. Our apprenticeship program does a great job of building journey people, but we cannot build them fast enough. Being a 4-year program, I know a lot of our council representatives are out talking with other contractors that aren't signatory and looking for more workforce that they can find and bring to us, get some journey level training, some enhancement training, and go out to the job as journey level workers. They are anticipating 40% more bridge work just in the Fairbanks area. Which we were already drastically short in last year with the amount of bridge work that was going on. Again, we'll be taking a class of about 10 pile drivers here starting March 14th. So we'll be doing interviews for our pile driver program next week. A few of the things that we've started doing to try to prepare for some of this work coming up, we used to take applications one time per year. And we found that was really not the best practice. It wasn't bringing in enough people at one time. And it wasn't really giving the opportunities for people to apply. It was, if you came in the day after we closed applications, you had to wait till next year. So we've started 2 application processes each year. We're doing 2 first-year selection processes, 2 first-year apprentice training classes. We're working with an architect to try to expand our training space at our Anchorage facility so that we can house more students per day and keep everybody, get our class sizes up as much as we can and still provide quality training, which has meant hiring additional staff. These are all things that we're willing and able to do and we're pretty excited about, but things that hadn't been done in the past. Some of the different ways we recruit our members. We are big with the high school job fairs and private job fairs, as many of our trades are. Alaska Works Partnership was mentioned a few times. They are a fantastic organization. They really provide a lot of entry-level training, kind of an introduction to a lot of the trades. They do have a carpentry program that's a 40-hour class, and a lot of their students kind of get exposure to what we do and then are interested in talking with us. And we spend a lot of time visiting with those classes and students and talking to them about what we do. We also, at our training center in Anchorage, we provide all the welding training for the Alaska Works Partnership welding programs. Women in the Trades rigging and pile driving program they have, they come to our training center, and one of our instructors teaches that for Alaska Works Partnership at our facility. We do work a lot with Avtech and King Tech. Really both fantastic partners, provide pretty high level of welding especially. They do have a carpentry program at those schools as well, but their welding programs are really top rate, and we do get a lot of our pile driver welder positions from them. The exiting military is always big. Looking at Fairbanks, especially small community, a lot of it is military based. And as those folks are transitioning out, we really reach out and try to provide all the information we can and point them in the direction of either carpenters, pile drivers, what they're interested in. But we do, we see a tremendous amount of that workforce transitioning out and looking for what they want to go to next. Some of our partnerships, high school pre-apprenticeship programs are huge for us. We have an agreement with the Fairbanks North Star Borough School District for direct entry paths into our Fairbanks program. We have one here with Juneau Douglas High School, a direct entry path for high school students. We are working with some of the other school districts to kind of set up the same type of pre-apprenticeship direct entry language. Some of that can be a little bit of a challenge to work through, but we partner with any school that we can. I sit on the curriculum committee for the Yukon Koyukuk School District. We work with them on developing curriculum for their teachers to teach their students. I currently sit on the curriculum committee for Hutchison High School in Fairbanks, and we have just provided them with carpenter-based curriculum for their training that they do in their school. So the high school programs are pretty near and dear to my heart. I started my apprenticeship right out of high school, and there was no path. There wasn't anything set up, and I kind of had the opposite of what we see now, where I was told, you don't want to go into construction. Why would you want to be a carpenter? You know, college, you have to go to college. And I think we've gotten a lot better in our schools at recognizing that the construction trades are a valuable career path. But I fully support anything that we can do in our high schools to help promote that.
So, Josh, currently you have no agreement with the Anchorage School District at all? Or?
Not a formal agreement, no. That's something that we are working towards. But I've been in the director position for a little over a year now, and we are exploring some of that with some of our Anchorage schools currently. But there is nothing set yet. We've mentioned Alaska Works Partnership, again, a very valuable partner for us, and I believe all the building trades, really, they recognize all of us, and they work with all of our different trades to promote. Again, House Bill 108 and 132, we fully support anything that helps bring those trades and the recognition to the high school students. Again, very important to me personally. I think the kids deserve to learn more about those paths, and I think the schools need to have, the facilities and the things that they need to help train people and move people in those directions. Some things that we're looking at going forward, and some things that would help our program and probably most of our apprenticeship programs for all trades: increasing funding for school CTE programs and classes. I know when I attended high school, we didn't have a carpentry program at the school that I went to. So for two periods a day, I drove from North Pole to Fairbanks as a high school student to attend two classes in Fairbanks because it was the only school that offered those programs. Coming from a low-income family, that was pretty tough for my family in general. That was an additional cost of, you know, paying the gas money just for me to drive for 2 hours a day to go to a different school. So that was something that my parents really kind of had to choose to invest in me because the program didn't exist where we lived. So I think that could be a really strong thing for all areas of our state. Incentives for partnerships between high schools and nonprofit training programs. I think this is something that everybody is kind of looking towards and hopefully excited about. If we can get more contractors and more training entities to support the high school students and recognize that and find the correct paths to utilize them on job sites and things like that, it only bolsters the future. You know, even if they decide not to work in construction later on, at least they get that exposure, they get that experience, and they can decide, make an educated decision if that career path is for them. Some increased education on alternative career pathways. Again, like I mentioned, it isn't out there quite enough in the high schools yet. It's gotten better, but it's certainly not where it needs to be. The increased STEP grant funding. Our program relies pretty heavily on STEP grant funding. We've been an honored recipient of the STEP grant for approximately since 2013. We manage those grants every year. It is extremely important to us. We would probably operate at a loss if we did not have the STEP grant. That's really what breaks down our training and keeps it at the level that we can provide. Increasing workforce development funds. I think there's a lot of ways that's been looked at and approached, but even just instructor development and helping some of our school teachers learn how to teach some of the construction trades things. I know we have a lot of our members that work with school teachers. I've spent a lot of time in schools. Maybe the CTE, the teacher doesn't quite understand the project they're working on, and we're always happy to go in and assist for a day and do what we can so that the students actually grasp what they're working on. And that's our contact information, and that essentially concludes my report. But I'd just like to thank everyone for allowing us to speak today, and I appreciate your time. I'd take any questions through the chair.
Thank you, Josh. Appreciate it. Are there any questions, Senator Reback?
Sure. Aside from the great presentation and run-through, I really appreciate your name, Josh. And thanks for – your parents had very good taste. I really appreciate learning more about this. So I was fortunate to have what was called a home construction course in my high school, which I took advantage of all 4 years of high school. I think the trades are fantastic. In my case, shortly after that happened, shortly after graduation, September 11th happened, and I went the military route. But had I not, I very likely would have ended up in the trade. So it certainly was. Aside from that, I think there's a lot of opportunity there, and I just appreciate you bringing that to our attention. It was great for my personal development in high school. It was really good, and so those opportunities are something that I think this committee needs to hear about. I think it's very valuable, and look forward to finding ways to help bridge those gaps. And just wanted to say thank you for being here to tell us about. I'm also I had no idea that divers and pile drivers were under
most people and, do not.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to say thank you for your presentation. It was a learning experience for me too. I thought I knew it all, but I don't. And so my question is, what's the STEP grant? I'm not familiar with the STEP grant. Is it federal or state? Could you tell me a little bit about that? Thank you.
Through the chair, the STEP grant is an Alaska state grant. It's state training and employment program. So this is funding that we receive based on what training we provide for different people that meet the requirements of the grant. It's also strictly one of the grant requirements is they have to be an Alaska resident, and we have to list what training we're providing, and it has to be a credentialed, industry recognized form of training. It can't be anything we make up. So our apprentices generally qualify under those grants, as well as our drain level workers for a lot of the classes we offer, but we also offer a lot of classes that we can't use that grant funding for because they may not meet the industry credential.
May I follow up, Madam Chair?
Yes,
thank you. So what's the amount of the line item for that grant program?
Through the chair, the max that you can receive as one organization is $400,000. We typically run anywhere from $300,000. We have received a max of $400,000 on occasion. For fiscal year 22, we received a little over $377,000.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And Josh, can you take a moment and explain the Alaska Works partnership that you have?
Yes, ma'am. So Alaska Works Partnership is a nonprofit organization. They're separate from our training, but we do pay membership fees to them. I think they're completely grant funded other than their membership fees. And they're open to the general public for providing that training. You can apply online and they do a small interview process and help you kind of pick what class you might be interested in taking. They provide the training. Usually they're training depending on what trade, but the trade is usually taught by a representative from one of the building trades in one of the union programs. Their carpentry courses are all taught by union carpenters. Like I mentioned, the pile driving and welding programs are often facilitated at our training center. They don't have welding booth space and things like that, so our instructors provide that training for them as well. But they are an introductory level program, I would say. They do a good job of allowing people to try several different trades through the course of a couple weeks and kind of get a feel for what they're really interested in and what they might really be comfortable doing.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate you coming before the committee today, and it was a really interesting presentation. So with that, we will go ahead and take a brief at ease while we get ready for the next presentation. Welcome back to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Next, we have the Alaska Operating Engineers. Thank you very much for being here. We've got Mike Holcomb, who's the administrator, and Corey Baxter, the district representative. Want to thank you for being here and go ahead and present your information. I mean, you've heard the other presentations, so you're very familiar now with kind of the focus of the committee and what we're interested in. So thank you for being here.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Mike Holcomb. I am the administrator for the Alaska Operating Engineers Employers Training Trust. Basically, I run the training for the operating engineers for the state of Alaska. I live in Palmer, actually just 3 miles from the training facility, so my commute isn't very long at all. I want to start today by telling you who we are. We are a 501c3 nonprofit training trust. We have a federally registered apprenticeship program with about 140 operator and mechanic and service tech apprentices in our program. Our apprentices go to basically all of the construction, road work, heavy duty mechanics, steel erection, building erection in the state of Alaska through various union contractors. We service 15 to 1800 local 302 members annually through our training center. So our training center is apprenticeship and journeyman, of course, and just like most of our unions, how we're structured is the contributions from the members is basically what funds our program, along with STEP grants or other grants that we get as well. We offer everything from various safety classes, skill upgrade classes, and then any certifications required for those positions as well. Our locations. Our main training facility is in Palmer. We sit on 163 acres. We have a 200 by 80 foot indoor arena, so 16,000 square foot arena. When you're doing dirt work in Alaska and trying to do that in December, it's a little difficult. So in the indoor arena, we're allowed, that allows us to go in there with heavy equipment and do various classes from, you know, October through May when the ground is hard. And I'm going to show you some pictures of that as well. We have a 20, currently it's a 10,000 square foot shop. We're in the middle of doing an improvement right now, and we're adding 10,000 square foot. Our main facility, our building is 12,000 square foot. It's offices and classes. Once the addition is completed, we will have a total of 17 classrooms available to our members. We also have another location in Fairbanks. It's at the Fairbanks Pipeline Training Center. It's a 4,800 square foot shop. We do various classes there as well. Basically everything that we do in Palmer, just on a smaller scale. Here's a picture of the arena, just to give you an idea of the scope of what we do there. Excavation and line and grade class is what you're looking at on the right side there, where they're actually digging trenches and doing pipe work to simulate what you would do in burying utilities, basically. And then we had a mass excavation there on the left side, we filled the material. The backfill was actually a crushed material that we had produced with our crusher at the facility. It's more pliable in the winter and doesn't freeze, basically, like normal pit run would. Paving. Have you ever seen any paving happen in December? If you come to our facility, you will. What we do is basically run that same crushed material through the pavers, and they can set up in there with the automatics and go ahead and simulate paving roads. As you can see, the snow's on the loader there. So December paving classes. We also do paving in the spring. Some real asphalt, of course. When it comes to paving training, it gets quite expensive because asphalt's not cheap. And whatever you're going to do, it's going to be a permanent fixture afterwards. So this is just a picture of the maintenance facility expansion. Like I said, we're gaining 6 classrooms. 3 of those are labs, storage, another bay, and a computer lab. A lot of what our apprentices do these days is on computers. For example, our heavy-duty mechanic apprentices have to do so many modules in a program called Caterpillar University. And this is something that was decided by the contractors, that they needed a higher level of knowledge coming out, the apprentices obtaining the higher level of knowledge after their first year. So we've basically given them several modules in CAT University to help promote that. Equipment. Currently at our site, we have 60-plus units of earth-moving, paving, and lifting equipment. So that's cranes and forklifts and dozers and loaders and graders and everything that you can think of that is used on a construction site. 7 on-highway CDL trucks and trailers. We do our own CDLs for all of our first-year apprentices and members. All first-year apprentices have to come out of their initial training with a Class A CDL, and that's something that the contractors have actually demanded. They want to be able to put somebody in an on-highway truck and, you know, pull a dozer across town or move their equipment, and a lot of times they utilize us for doing that. And then, of course, we have simulators. I've always been a fan of simulators. There's nothing like the real thing, but a simulator is very practical when it comes to controls familiarization. Instead of putting somebody in an excavator and having them be hard on that piece of equipment, and you're burning fuel and oil and everything else, you can put them in a simulator, and it gets them used to how that machine works and how to do walk arounds. The simulators are very high tech these days, and rather expensive as well. But we've seen an improvement in performance, especially for our first year people, just being able to know the controls before actually jumping in a real piece of machinery. Apprenticeship program. So like I mentioned earlier, we are a DOL, a federal sponsored program. Our three occupations currently are heavy equipment operator. So that is a 6,000 hour program. That's OJT. Okay. 640 hours are required by the feds for every occupation that we have. But they, as far as their OJT hours on the job, that is done with the contractors. So basically for operators, that's 6,000. Heavy duty mechanics are 8,000 hours. And then the lubrication service techs are 5,000 hours. 480 before dispatch is what I put there. So what happens is when they come into our system, they're scheduled to report to training. So the way we run our classes is that the mechanics and operators are there for 12 weeks prior to taking a dispatch. The reason for that is because you're trying to teach them everything under the sun in a limited amount of time. So when they actually hit the job site, they don't have the deer in the headlights look in their eyes. We have various rotations that they go through on a weekly basis, and it's really a minimum. They're then required after that to do 80 hours of upgrade per year, minimum. Again, we tell everybody that you owe us 2 weeks, but if you want to do more, absolutely, we're going to do that for you. So they get most of their required training hours before dispatch. Active apprentices, as I stated earlier, we're about 150 as of 3/22. That would be this month. Something that we have just done, and I see it's happening amongst the other trades as well, is the trustees have just approved a second intake as well. The forecast for where we're going to be with experienced help is grim, based on the work that's coming right now, and so we're going to increase our intake this year alone. We took a combined 60 apprentices, and that's with operators, mechanics, and oilers all combined. A first year.
Senator Rivek has a question.
I try to wait, but I'm just really curious. You mentioned, and this has kind of been a theme in a lot of the meetings that we've had, trying to anticipate the increase in work. And so my question is you mentioned you've increased the intake. How do you kind of I know there's a lot of question marks around the quantity or what's coming or how. So how do you kind of gauge how much to step up?
Madam Chair. Thank you, Senator Rivak, for the question. A lot of it is what the projects have been bid and awarded is kind of what we're going off of. And then the apprenticeship hours that are on those jobs as well. And I tell everybody every year it's a crystal ball, because it really is. In the fall when we take our classes, we're not really sure where we're going to be the next year. And there's a lot of things that we take into consideration. How many we're losing, and I mean that in a good way. Graduating, I guess, is the term I should say. And you lose a few along the way as well. But you have to take your losses into consideration, and then how much work is coming up. And really, it's a guess is what it is. It's supply and demand, and you're going to see that here shortly. I'm going to cover that a little bit more. But thank you.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, Mike.
One last thing on this slide, just starting wage, 60% apprentice. And it depends on the contracts and how they're negotiated and where they're at. But approximately it's about $24 an hour plus a fringe. And our system is very similar to everybody else's. Every 1,000 hours, depending on what you are and what occupation you're in, you get a raise. So I want to say at first it's 60%. I'm talking just operators. Our other scales are a lot different, but operators are 60%, and then they bump to a 70% and an 80%, and then it goes like 85, 90, 95, and then full scale at that point. Those hours you see there for those occupations, more or less, when somebody says, well, how long is that? Well, it kind of depends, because some people go to work and never are out of work, and some people are. So basically, it's a 2 to 5 year commitment is what it is when asked.
And Mike, I just want to mention our committee ends at 3. We actually have somebody else following you.
Well, better hurry then.
And I mean, it's very interesting, but if there are areas, you know, that you feel are not as germane.
Thank you. Apprentice statistics, just real quick here. There are numbers that we are proud of, and then there are numbers that we need to work on. Veterans are one of those. We have 3 currently in our system. Part of the reason for that is 6 of them just graduated. So, that's something that we have to do better at. And then you can see Alaska Native is 21%. That's a respectable number. Females, we have 23 female operating engineers in our apprenticeship program currently. That's about 17%, I believe, of our total. So, outreach partnerships, again, we work with AFTEC, KCC, UAS, Hutch, MatSU Career Tech. We have a special relationship with them. We actually, the Skills USA competition, which is a national competition, we work with the Career Tech to host the hydraulics competition, actually, for that. And then the winner of that, as kind of a carrot, is we've given them the golden ticket. They have the option to be direct indentured into the program if they so choose to do so. Outreach partnerships, Alaska Works, you're going to hear that a lot from the trades. They work very well with us. They do a lot for us. Partners for Progress and Delta, that's a 3-week program for us. Most of their funding is TVEP. Kinnick Tribal, we do classes for. We've done the DOC, the Highland Women's Correctional Facility classes for about 3 years. We were involved with them. Fairbanks North Star School District, of course, and then the DOT. And that's through the Fairbanks Pipeline Training Center. We've done blade classes for them where they would bring rural people in from various villages, and we would help them with blade instruction. Craft partnerships, again, at the Fairbanks Pipeline Training Center, we're working with the plumbers and seafenders, the teamsters and the laborers during the pipeline training that we do there annually. And then in Palmer, the iron workers work with our crane operations to actually do simulated steel erection classes. And then masons and plasterers are also, they work at our facility as well, and we do projects with them as well. I just wanted to show you real quick the classes that we offer at our facility, safety classes, CDL, crane, grade, GPS classes, heavy equipment, heavy-duty mechanics, electrical, welding, and pipeline. And we could talk about that for years. Supply and demand, you know, just looking again, going back to what we just touched on, just looking at some of the money that's going to be out there. There's going to be over $300 million increased support of Alaska modernization improvements, $225 million in bridge repair, $700 plus million currently awarded and upcoming for highway improvements. And everybody is already calling us asking for apprentices. It's happening earlier than it probably ever has. And I would say the timing of what we're doing is good, but in my opinion, it probably should have started 2 years ago as far as having people that are going to meet that demand now. There's going to be some growing pains, I think, with some of this, but we're just going to do the best we can do to try to give them, you know, as many skilled individuals as we can. So I just wanted to go over the costs because that's always an issue. You know, our budget is basically between $3.5 and $4 million annually. We're around $2 million in labor, fuel, and maintenance. I mean, we have probably one of the most expensive trades there is to fund. I mean, when you're buying heavy equipment and when you're buying diesel and everything that goes along with that. And then, you know, we just put 2.3 into a new expansion for more classrooms and more space. And then we try to contribute about 175 annually to new equipment as well. So, increased funding with STEP would be a solution. That would help us a bunch. We do participate in the STEP program, and it's kind of been dwindling the last couple of years. Any increase in STEP would help us greatly. Just like it was stated earlier, too, increased apprentice utilization ratio. In our standards, it says you shall use 1 in 5 apprentices per journey person. And really, it's about 1 in 20 is where we're at now. And we need to do better. We need to change something to do that because, 10 years down the road, I think you're going to regret that. State required apprentice hours, just like what Aaron had asked for earlier. I mean, I think that's one direction we go with that as well. This is our new pamphlet as far as when we're accepting apprentices this turn and starting in April. So we'll be doing it again biannually, and everyone will have an opportunity to apply for our program twice a year now. And hopefully we're going to catch more people as far as, in the apprentice net, so they don't have to wait a year to apply for a program that they just missed the application process. I'm going as fast as I can. And then there's my information in case you need to ever get a hold of me. I think at this point that concludes my presentation.
Well, thank you very much. It's really fascinating, and I've been to your training center, and you didn't let me try out the heavy equipment, but, I did get the tour. So I think it's really innovative that, you have the indoor facility for people to use. So, Senator Rivak?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And very briefly, I appreciate you coming before the committee to help educate us on the good work that you're doing. I understand that one of our esteemed colleagues hired you way back when. Is that the truth? So I, a little add on to my story, when in the military I was a tanker, and so our friend from Fairbanks, Senator Bishop, is very much a heavy equipment enthusiast, and so we've had a lot of great conversations about that and about the great work that you do as well. But I just wanted to say that he sent several pages of very tough questions to ask you to help advance your professional development. Unfortunately, we're short on time, and so I'm sorry that we won't be able to do that. But he definitely is very proud of the work that you're doing and wanted to relay that to you. So thanks again for coming before the committee.
Thank you very much. I echo the comments and appreciate you being here. We're going to take a brief at ease while we wait for the next presenter to come forward. Welcome back to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Next on Teams or Zoom, we've got Ryan Andrew, who's with the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. Welcome to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Appreciate you being here. We've gone a little bit longer than normal, and so I wanted to say that we will be extending the meeting until 3:15. However, I'm going to pass the gavel to the Vice Chair, Senator Rivak, because I have some constituents who are here waiting in my office. So with that, I will pass the gavel over to Senator Rivak, and I want to thank all the members for being here and everyone who presented today. It was very interesting, and definitely something that the committee is interested in keeping up to date on is all of the activities that you're doing to help train Alaskans and also make sure that that we are prepared for the opportunities that are coming our way. So thank you very much, and thank you, Josh.
No problem. Thank you, Madam Chair. Welcome, Ryan Andrew, business representative here on Teams. We are already running late, so I will just let you jump right into it. Please put yourself on the record and walk us through.
Thank you, Mr. Vice. Can everyone hear me okay in the meeting?
Yes, we can.
Perfect. All right. Thank you very much. And thank you to the members of the committee for allowing me to speak today about workforce development and the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. I apologize I'm not able to be in Juneau today and realize that I'm up against the clock, so I will try to move along here quickly. For the record, my name is Brian Andrew, and I am the Assistant Business Manager for the Anchorage Office of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 1547, that's the IBEW. So the IBEW represents more than 4,000 workers here in Alaska in a broad range of jobs, though today I'll be talking about our more traditional apprenticeship careers in the electrical construction industry. You all should have the PowerPoint presentation there, and I see it's on the screen, so that's fantastic. I'll use that to kind of guide me a little bit today, and I think we can probably go on to the first slide, please. So I'd like to start out by talking a little bit about the joint apprenticeship model and how it's used in the construction industry. These programs are jointly administered by labor, which is the union that represents the workforce, and by management, who are the employers in the industry. The apprenticeship programs are funded by employer contributions, which are typically hourly contributions based on hours worked on the projects. This model has been used extensively in the construction industry. It produces excellent results with labor and management cooperating to administer the apprenticeship program and ensure the proper training of all apprentices. These apprenticeship programs are also registered with the United States Department of Labor, which is an important step in making sure that proper administration and training takes place. So we can move to the next slide, please. Speaking specifically about the electrical industry here in Alaska, we have a joint apprenticeship between the IBEW, Local 1547, and the Alaska chapter of the National Electrical Contractors Association, or NECA. It's a statewide training program that consists of a mixture of on-the-job experience and related classroom instruction for our industry. Briefly, the three most common disciplines that we train for are a journeyman electrician. So those are the folks doing the electrical work inside a building, typically wiring, you know, outlets, light fixtures, fire alarm systems, so on and so forth. Then we've also got a program for a journeyman power lineman. Those are the folks who work on the overhead power lines out in the elements, you know, working in the storms and working to get our power back on when there's power outages. And really, you know, a pretty high risk job, really hazardous. And then lastly, we also have a program for journeyman telecommunication workers. So they are in charge of installing infrastructure and building cabling and that sort of thing for data and for telephone capabilities. I think we can go on to the next slide, please. So each of these three disciplines require 8,000 hours of on-the-job experience and approximately 1,000 hours of classroom instruction. Apprenticeship completion and journeyman status is achieved after about 4 to 5 years in the program. That's the average, about 4.5 years to complete those. New applicants are taken from an applicant pool or an eligibility list, which applicants are placed on after they interview for the program. Applicants are taken from the list as needed on industry demand. And one advantage of the apprenticeship model in the construction industry is that we're scalable based on industry demand. We're able to increase training opportunities and classes that we offer when there's an increased demand for workers. Next slide, please, if we could. Thank you. Now I'd like to talk a little bit about some of the challenges that our program faces with the influx and infrastructure work that Alaska will be experiencing soon. So again, the apprenticeship program can grow and expand based on demand in the industry. However, our program size is limited by the positions available to employ those apprentices. And this is especially true for beginning first-year apprentice positions. An additional challenge exists with employers that are not as willing to hire apprentices and invest in training them. I think this is something that Aaron alluded to in his presentation earlier, that, you know, we wish that all employers would be willing to hire and train apprentices, but unfortunately, that's not always the case. And the reality is that it really is a commitment to hire these apprentices, and it's crucial to the development of the future workforce. Next slide, please, if we could. So we also deal with an additional challenge regarding funding when there's an increased demand for training. Available training is directly proportional to work hours, and it lags slightly. So practically speaking, hourly contributions are paid to the program and based on work hours that are currently being performed. If there was a sudden increase in demand, as an example, the funding needed for additional training wouldn't be immediately available. Another challenge that our apprenticeship program in particular is experiencing is the increased cost for our apprentices to obtain a commercial driver's license, and that's due in part to the new federal training requirements for those CDLs. Let's go to the next slide, if we could, please. So I mentioned a little bit about some of the challenges that we face in the industry when it comes to workforce development and preparing for the increase in infrastructure work that's going to take place. One possible solution to alleviate the bottleneck problem of not having enough first year or beginner apprentice positions available is something we've heard a couple of times already today, but I think it's really, really important. And that is increasing apprenticeship opportunities through apprenticeship utilization requirements. Again, we've heard a little bit about it today. These can be, you know, either project specific or they can be written more broadly for multiple projects. And they're typically measured as a percentage of either the overall workforce or as a percentage of an individual craft work hours. So as an example, I think one suggestion earlier we heard today was a percentage of 10% of the labor hours for a particular craft. It could be, you know, 10, 15, whatever we feel would be appropriate to bring in enough apprentices on the project. Those are excellent ways to really increase the apprentices on the project. All right, let's go to the next slide, please, if we could. Speaking just a little bit further about potential solutions to some of these challenges, funding solutions in particular could include, again, we've heard about today, increased funding for the State Training and Employment Program, or the STEP grants, as they're called, that are administered by the Alaska Department of Labor. And for our program specifically, we use those STEP funds to assist with training costs related to the CDL license requirement, as well as using it to support apprentices from rural Alaska who travel into our training facilities in Anchorage and Fairbanks for their classroom training. Next slide, if we could, please. So another potential solution for developing needed workforce is increased funding for pre-apprenticeship programs. We've heard today about Alaska Works Partnership. They're a great example of a pre-apprenticeship program, and I can't say enough good things about what they do at AWP. The programs provide excellent training for potential applicants prior to entering the apprenticeship. This is really neat because it gives the applicant the opportunity to try out the trade before they commit to the apprenticeship. And these pre-apprenticeships really are essential to recruit and prepare candidates for apprenticeship opportunities. And we can go to the next slide, please. Well, thanks again to the committee. That concludes my presentation for today. You know, one thing I just wanted to mention also, kind of going back to the pre-apprenticeship discussion, and you know, one of the things that the IBEW is really proud of, a couple of them actually, is our partnership with King Tech High School here in Anchorage. We have a really strong partnership with the Anchorage School District and King Tech in particular, wherein we can have the ability to direct enter high school graduates from King Tech who have taken the electricity course. They can come straight into the apprenticeship program right out of graduation, and they're off to a great career. You know, and then I would say if anyone here gets a chance to attend the signing ceremony that they have in the spring. Typically happens, I think, towards the end of the year in April and May. If you get an invitation to that, I would highly encourage you to attend. It's really a special event. You get to watch these high school kids who are finishing up, you know, really opening a door to a great career right out of high school. And there's, you know, no college debt incurred, and they're learning a great trade. So really special to see that happen. The other thing I will mention, I know Aaron mentioned it earlier in his presentation, the IBEW, another pre-apprenticeship program that we're very proud of is the Veterans Electrical Entry Program. And that is a form of a pre-apprenticeship in which we will bring in a class of transitioning veterans within the last 6 months of their service, and they're able to complete the classroom training portion of their first year of apprenticeship. And after that, they are able to, they're actually placed in apprenticeships throughout the country. We're also, again, one of the national apprenticeship programs. And so each, you know, each area that you may find yourself in, you're going to have the same training, at least on the classroom side, regardless of where you go. So really special for those transitioning veterans to get that career, because as we all know, transitioning out of the military is not the easiest thing, certainly. So that's something we're really, really proud of, and it helps those veterans, you know, get into a great career after their military career. So with those couple things, just wanted to mention that. I will leave it at that. And on the slide there, you see there's contact information for our training director for the IBEW NECA program, and that's Deborah Kelly. She's a fantastic resource if you have questions. Also would put the invitation out there that if any committee members would like to tour our training facility, we're always happy to put on a tour, and you can see the training that we do firsthand. So thank you, and I think that about wraps it up. I'd be happy to take any questions from the committee today.
Thank you very much, Ryan. Senator Gray Jackson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't have any questions, but I just want to thank you, Ryan, for being here. It's good to see you. And I want to thank everybody for the presentation. They were very educational, and I really appreciate it this afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Gray Jackson. I'll echo that. This is very timely. I think it's good to talk about training. We're excited about the opportunities that are before us. I think it's important that we take all things into consideration about how we get from here to there. And I think you guys, it sounds like you're doing a great job. And I would just like to personally thank you, each one of you, for your efforts toward employment for veterans. That's certainly an issue that is near and dear to my heart, and I appreciate all of that and all the other things that you do. So thank you, Senator Gray Jackson, and to the committee staff for allowing us the additional time so that we could get through these fantastic presentations. Hope we have them again soon. That concludes today's meeting. The next meeting will be Monday, March 7th at 1:30 p.m., and there's no meeting scheduled for Friday, March 4th. With that, we are adjourned.